So secondly,
the Christian spiritual community,
or the Christian family of spiritual communities. This was originally, of course, the church. That is to say, originally, in the sense that at the very beginnings of Christianity, as far as we can see, they are very obscure, the church or churches. That whole period is shrouded in darkness and controversy. But in the 5th century, we know, Christianity became the official religion of the whole Roman Empire. And when it became established in this way, when Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, it virtually ceased to be a spiritual community. It became an aspect of the group, the ecclesiastical wing of the state. It became even, eventually, a political power in its own right, claiming political authority, political control. And increasingly, through the centuries, it became, especially in the form of the Roman Catholic Church, authoritarian, intolerant, coercive, and persecuting. And one must even confess that the seeds of this development were present in Christianity from the very beginning, perhaps present in, implicit in, all forms of monotheism. However, within official Christianity itself, there was a new development. Spiritual communities arose within official Christianity, to some extent almost in protest against it, and these were the monasteries, the monastic communities. And there one tended to find the real Christians, the real individuals, the real spiritual communities. And the monasteries, as everybody knows, played a very important part in European history during the Dark Ages. That is to say, from the collapse of the Roman Empire up to, say, roughly the time of Charlemagne. The monasteries, it was, that were the centres of civilization and culture. They preserved much of the ancient classical, Latin, and even Greek literature. And in this connection, the Benedictine order is of particular importance. The Benedictine order was founded by St. Benedict in the 6th century in Italy. It wasn't so much an order, it was more a loose association of autonomous monasteries, each under its own abbot. And some of these monasteries and some of these abbots eventually became very, very powerful, even economically and politically powerful. So again, the same sort of thing happened as it happened in the case of the church. The original spiritual community, the monasteries themselves, ceased to be spiritual communities. This is by about, say, the 9th, 10th or 11th century. They became groups. They became part of the church in the narrow, socio-political, ecclesiastical sense. And once again, there arose a need for reform. And in the 12th century, there came the Cistercians, the Cistercian monastic movement. In the 13th century, there came the Franciscans and the Dominicans, the mendicant friars, and various other spiritual movements at the same time. Very often we don't realize what a tremendous spiritual ferment there was in the Europe of those days. And some of these other spiritual movements that arose at that time, in the 12th century, the 13th century, even the beginning of the 14th century, were quite heretical by Orthodox Christian standards, like, for instance, the Brethren of the Free Spirit. And they were persecuted ruthlessly and relentlessly by the church, and eventually, in many cases, stamped out. In fact, we may say that from the 13th century onwards, the Christian church in Europe became almost entirely, almost exclusively, a repressive force. But in the 16th century, as you see, we're having a very, very rapid survey of European religious history indeed. In the 16th century, there came a great explosion, as one might have expected, especially in Central Europe and Western Europe. And this explosion we call the Reformation. And this great explosion gave birth to many spiritual communities, both large and small, all more or less Christian. Some of them lasted only a few months, some lasted for years, in a very few cases even for centuries. And then, in the 17th century, there came another great explosion, this time in India.
this time in England, what we call the Puritan Revolution. And this gave birth to still more spiritual communities. But few of these again lasted very long. The best known of them, perhaps, though one of the shortest lived, being the Diggers. Those that did survive, those spiritual communities of this period that did survive, became, in the end, virtually churches. For instance, the Quakers. So from all this we can see that spiritual communities have played quite an important part in European history, though largely an unacknowledged part. Quite recently I was reading a very interesting book entitled Communalism by the American poet and critic Kenneth Rexroth, who's also produced some versions in English of Chinese and Japanese Chan and Zen poetry. In fact, I found this book, Communalism, so interesting and so relevant in many ways to the FWBO that I've reviewed it for the next issue of the newsletter. It's a history of communes and what he calls intentional communities from the earliest times down to the 20th century, mainly as occurring in Europe and the North American continent. And reading through this book, Communalism, one gets a very definite impression, at least I got a very definite impression, a very strong impression. It's a very rich, a very fascinating book with lots of detail, lots of information, also very popularly written, but I got a very strong overall impression nonetheless. And the impression that I got was that for hundreds of years, for 1,000 years, 2,000 years in the West, a great battle had been going on. A battle between the so-called religious group, i.e. the official church, on the one hand, and on the other, the various spiritual communities. And this was a battle between power on the one hand and metta on the other, between authority on the one hand and spiritual freedom on the other, between stagnation on the one hand and growth on the other, between reactivity on the one hand and creativity on the other. So it's not very difficult at this point to see just where the WBO comes in.